The Cinema Specialists are back, and today is the conclusion. I have done it. The conclusion of Phase 4 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. John, this journey started a long time ago. It wasn't nearly as long ago as it might feel, but it is over. We will come back, and we will do the Phase 5 movies before Deadpool 3, but we're going to take a break from this series, and we're not going to keep going forward. Instead, we're going to jump into something else. Next week, we'll just be doing two, and then we're going to be doing three brackets, which we've kind of hinted at. I forget if we've said exactly what they are. John can probably remind me, but that's not important. What is important is that today is the final day of me having to talk about a Marvel movie for at least 3 months, and that brings me so much joy. For the first time in 6 months, I do not have to watch a Marvel movie this week. That brings a tear to my eye. So welcome, everybody, to Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, and Drive Away Dolls. Probably the happiest you'll ever hear me on a podcast. John, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm doing well. It's kind of weird that like we're at an end point for this MCU watch at this point. It honestly just like became such a regular routine in my life that pressing play on Wakanda Forever this week took a lot of willpower.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so I'm going to go look at this real quick. So what number movie is this in the MCU? This is the 30th movie, the MCU. Mm-hmm. The 30th movie. So literally for 30 weeks, John and I have just been sitting down since Barbenheimer weekend. John and I have been sitting down at least once a week. I think we took 1 week off because I was in Disney World to talk about these movies. And I'll tell you what, when you're in Disney World, you see plenty of Marvel. So it wasn't like an escape from Marvel for me there. But it is kind of, there's a little melancholy. There's not much melancholy, but there's a little melancholy here. You know, it's a little sad that we're ending. Oh, I guess this is the 29th one. Did I add Black Panther Wakanda Forever in? No, it is 30. It is 30. I haven't added it to my list yet. But I'm excited to move on to something else. Jason Obermeyer says, how are you feeling, Phil? Like a kid on Christmas holding up? I mean, it's funny because when I told John, and I'm going to hold it for a second, but when I told John what my rating was on Black Panther Wakanda Forever, he's like, so you're just really happy it's over. And I was like, maybe that's what's driving me forward here. Maybe that's what's making me so optimistic about the movie I just watched. Who knows? But here we are. Regardless, we're here. We're ready to talk about this movie. Next week will just be Dune Part 2, which I'm really excited to do. And the week after that, we're going to be doing an Adam Sandler bracket. So, yeah, I think I said that last week. If I didn't, now you know. Adam Sandler bracket the week after. Then we're going to be doing Letterboxd 16 most popular movies. Now, the interesting thing with that is Dune 2 going to become one of the 16 most popular movies before we actually sit down and do that podcast? John, do you think he could sneak in?
It's possible, but I don't think so.
It's probably too many.
The first Dune's not on the list, right?
No, but has there ever been as much hype for a sci-fi movie in our lifetime as there is currently for Dune Part 2? Like, what other movie? I mean,
we were alive in 1999 when The Phantom Menace came out.
Was that sci-fi or was that fan service?
Maybe we can save that for May when I'm sure we inevitably talk about The Phantom Menace.
Yikes. Oh, yeah, because on our Patreon for our $5 Tuesdays, it's the 25th anniversary of Star Wars.
And it's getting a theatrical re-release that the first weekend of May.
Oh, my God, that sounds terrible. okay, well, that's a bad movie. Jar Jar Binks is a great character, though. Don't care what anybody says. John's favorite, he said, of the entire Star Wars universe. That's what he told me. He's off camera. He said Jar Jar Binks is his favorite. He has a T-shirt, a plush, a pillow, all this fun stuff. He's ready to roll. But let's jump in first, and let's talk about Drive Away Dolls. Oh, wait, John, before that. Also, the final bracket of the month of March, probably the best one we're ever going to do. So if you're in the community here, if you're subscribed to the channel, which I hope if you listen to the Cinema Specialist, you are subscribed to us. If you're not, get in there and subscribe. Like this video. We're only at 10,260 or something like that in terms of subscribers. I want to hit 20K way sooner than people think we could hit 20K. So I know I'm saying that here to the Cinema Specialist. I'm going to say this on Wednesday night when I do my Survivor podcast. I'm going to say this on Tuesday night, tomorrow night, when I do a Deal or No Deal podcast. I'm going to say this on Thursday night We do our traders podcast. If you're listening to this stuff, get in there and subscribe and like, because I put out a question of these four movies, which one is your favorite? Now, Space Jam won overwhelmingly, which we expected. There's another bracket coming because John and I are going to do the top. We're going to talk about 12. Yes, that's why we need four here and then, right? Because we decided on 12?
Yes. Is it 12? Yes.
Okay. We're going to be doing 12 90s sports nostalgia movies. That's what we're going to be doing. We're talking Space Jam, The Sandlot, Air Bud, all that fun stuff. So we're going to dive into that one. You have to see when we actually release the official bracket for that. But those are going to be our three brackets of the month of March. And then we're going to jump into another thing, which I've hinted at numerous times, which is going to be a you haven't seen that. Or we're going to talk about movies that it's pretty shocking if you haven't seen them. But we're also going to be talking about – we're going to try to keep it kind of relevant to what movies are being released and maybe like, oh – this week we have, you know, Dune Part 2. So what movie is it shocking that you haven't seen from Timothy Chalamet or something along those lines? So we're going to get into that. That's going to be the next series that we do. And that's one that will probably become the staple of what the cinema specialists are, at least for the near future as we continue to go through. That'll allow us to do some really popular movies, some hidden gems, and kind of bridge that gap between what we were doing with our top 100 and now what we were doing at the Marvel Film Review. Anyway, Drive Away Dolls fucking sucked. I hated every single second of it. So, John, you go first because you gave it 3 stars. Oh, Ricky Zalula, hello. First time catching you live. Welcome to the show. Go ahead, John.
I just had a fun time with this movie. And that's really what it came down to.
You have a fun time with, like, smallpox, too? You think that's fun, John? You think, like...
No, because smallpox is eradicated, and I don't have to worry about that.
Okay, John, but, like, you're the kind of guy who's like, hey, maybe we should bring that back, because that would be fun. If you thought Drive Away Dolls was fun, you enjoy putting, like, bamboo shoots underneath your fingernails? Is that...
Like
is
in that episode of Lost? Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what gets me going here. No, I hated this movie.
Go ahead.
I enjoyed it enough. I think I was a little high on 3 stars. I think I was coming. It's really funny because I actually kind of double featured this movie this week with Hundreds of Beavers, which was a much better movie. If you have an opportunity to see that movie, go see it. It's unlike any other movie you will see released any time in the last like 80 years. But I don't know. I think I was riding that high. The more I think about Drive Away Dolls, like 3 stars feels like too many. But I enjoyed it. Maybe I was primed to laugh because I had been laughing for the last hour and a half prior to this movie. Mm-hmm. But it was humorous enough. It was fun enough. But I would be lying if I didn't say it wasn't disappointing.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, right? Like, whether even if you like this movie, like John did, it's not at the level of anything a Coen brother is capable of making. And I understand this was Ethan Coen, and it was with his wife, Trisha Cook, and like, who knows how this movie actually ended up getting produced. But I'll tell you what, Ethan Coen, he's not really directing anything solo again anytime soon based on how this one just went, because the box office on this is going to be terrible. And man, they stretched this movie to be an hour and 24 minutes. This was a really short movie, but for me, it felt long. What bothered me the most about this movie is everything just felt forced. From Margaret Qualley's accent to the dildos in the briefcase to including as many A-list actors in small roles as was humanly possible to all of the graphic lesbian sex. It all felt so unbelievably forced to me. And I've seen enough great Coen Brothers movies to know that they don't need to force it. Their humor naturally shines through. This was the least subtle movie that I've ever seen them make. And granted, I haven't seen every Coen Brothers movie. This was so not subtle at all. And honestly, when it ended, I said, what was the point of me just watching that movie? I don't understand why this movie was made. The premise of this movie of two lesbians in 1999 picking up a case that has dildos and whatever else in there and driving it south to Tallahassee. And like, it's like this kind of Thelma and Louise type thing is a great premise. And I felt like it was made in the least interesting way imaginable.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I think the big thing with this movie, it's funny because you said it felt really long despite being like an hour and 24 minutes. I actually felt like it flew by, and it was like It felt like an episode of TV more than it did a full film.
That's fair.
And I think, yeah, I think this movie could have used another hour, in all honesty.
Well, if this movie was another hour, John, I don't know if I would have made it here to podcast with you tonight.
But I think, like, the thing is like, if you add another hour to this movie, you get a lot more depth in these characters, because the characters were a bit shallow because there's not a lot of investment into them. There's not enough. But more importantly, I think this, the most exciting aspect of this film is this idea of the journey. And we don't really get a lot of the journey because of how short the runtime of this one is.
Yeah, there's not much of the journey, and then the people giving chase and everything aren't given enough to do. That was my biggest. Coleman Domingo is totally wasted in this movie. Mm-hmm. Bill Camp is barely in it, even though Bill Camp is the best part of this movie by far. I mean,
I agree.
I love him as Curly. Beanie Feldstein is solid, but she's also barely in this movie. And I feel like the problem is, you just mentioned the characters. What is there to know about these characters? They are queer characters. One is very much like sex, 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 and the other one hasn't had sex in a very long time. That's what I know about these characters. That's it. That's literally what they are. And for me, it's like, you see the Coen brothers. I think about a movie like Burn After Reading, right? Mm-hmm. They've already done the dildo joke a million times. We've seen it so many times.
They really like dildos.
They love really dildos. Like dildos. It is their go-to sense of humor. But like, when I watch this movie, I sit there and I say, what is ultimately what they were trying to say to me? What was I supposed to come out of this movie feeling? What was I supposed to feel about Margaret Qualley and Geraldine Viswanathan's character? What was I supposed to think about either one of them? I don't know. Are we supposed to sit here and go, well, it's funny because it's politicians and it's showing like politicians are like, no matter how clean they are, they always have something. It's like, that's not a unique take. And it felt like to me, it felt like a lazy version of Burn After Reading. I don't know. I like Burn After Reading. I haven't seen it in a very long time, so maybe I'm misremembering it. But I just found myself from the opening scene, man, with the Pedro Pascal situation, I said, I think that was that funny.
I was disappointed in that scene. That scene just felt weird and cartoony for what this movie ended up being. And it's weird saying that a movie about a case of dildos doesn't feel cartoony the entire time, but most of the movie doesn't feel too cartoony. Mm-hmm. But that opening scene really did. And it sets a weird tone for the rest of the film that I don't think is matched at all.
Yeah. No, I agree. I feel like it sets it off on a weird note, because if you don't laugh at that first scene, I don't think you laugh the entire movie. And I can say that from experience. I didn't laugh at the first scene, so I didn't laugh the entire movie because I felt like the humor was just lost on me at that point. There was nothing left for me. It was game over, man. Like, there was just nothing there anymore for me. And it was a bummer because I wanted to like this movie. I was really excited when I saw the trailer. I was really excited. I mean, the pacing of the trailer is so much better than the movie. You said that this could have been an hour longer. It felt rushed, but it felt like it still was moving slow in my book because I didn't feel like I cared where it was going. Yeah. And so like every joke and all of those things that started to happen, I was just like, okay, what is going on? What is going on? I don't know, man. I just... This is a movie where we did a 7-minute intro talking about what we're going to be doing in the coming weeks. We've now hit 14 minutes in this podcast and I'm already over it. Like this was one of the worst. And the thing is about this one is I don't want to come out here and rip this to shreds the way I've ripped to shreds some of these Marvel movies or like whatever, because I don't feel like the need to do that. I don't feel like that's fun. Mm-hmm. And instead, I'm sitting here just going, oh, my God, what could have been? Like, this could have been so much better. And, you know, have your take. Be strong in it, John. Tell me I'm wrong. But I'm just coming out of this so unbelievably disappointed. And now I've seen – hang on. I got to make sure I get this number. Got to make sure I get this number right. So hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. This is important because I need people to know – that I'm not lying here. How do you even do this, John? This is so hard. There we go. Newest first. I have now seen three 2024 movies, and they are all one star in my book.
Not a good start to the year by any means.
Oh, it's killing me, man. It's killing me. And I mean, Drive Away Dolls has to be your favorite of the year, right?
Yeah, so far.
Nice.
But I mean, I've seen one more 2024 movie, and it was a 1.5-star movie. So
which one was that?
There's not a lot of competition. That was a Frankenstein, the new Diablo Cody movie.
Oh, was that bad?
Wasn't good.
Yeah, I had no interest in seeing that. We like purposely put that one off.
Yeah. But that's okay. Hopefully next week everything changes.
Well, I think too, with January and February this year especially, and to kind of turn the attention away, I had said to you previously what I was worried about with this Ethan Coen movie is that it was coming out in February. Yeah, you throw out an Ethan Coen movie in February, that starts to concern me that maybe it's not going to be that good. And I truly believe that if Ethan Coen's name wasn't attached to this, this would be a 25% on Rotten Tomatoes. But I feel like critics and stuff have too much respect for Ethan Coen. Not saying you're wrong, John. I'm just saying I hated this movie.
I think there is a little bit of depth to this, but it lacks the depth that we usually get in a Coen brothers movie.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting to compare because we've had solo films from both Ethan Coen and Joel Coen now. Mm-hmm. And now we can definitively say Joel Coen's was much better.
And where was I going with what I was saying? I totally forget where I was going with that. It was like, what was I on? I was on one and then I totally got distracted. Because of the strike, the writer strike and the actor mm-hmm. strike, I feel like we're getting into even worse territory than we might normally have been in during January and February of this year. There's less movies coming out. Fewer movies coming out. They aren't good. Who knows if they were even rewritten? Who knows mm-hmm. how long they were able to shoot? If shooting was interrupted, if there were problems, issues, whatever. Oh man, I feel like this is going to be tough. And I'm really happy that Dune Part 2 is the final movie that we're going to do out of new movies coming out right now. Cause I do need a break from going and forcing myself to watch some of this. I mean, every week we are really struggling to come up with what our other movie is going to be. That's why we've done Naiad. That's why we've done Society of the Snow, because we were going back into 2023 and pulling movies that we hadn't seen that were smaller hits, because there was no reason to go to the theater and see these movies. And it's disappointing because, you know, gone are the days of getting a surprise hidden gem in January or February. It just doesn't happen anymore. And you look at the box office from this last weekend. Okay. Like the box office from this last weekend, Drive Away Dolls made $2.4 million.
Yikes.
$2.4 million. The budget on this movie. Let me see. Where did they even tell you what the budget on this movie was? So this movie was supposed to be released September 22nd, 2023. It was delayed because of the SAG-AFTRA strike. So I think that this probably needed more
attention.
Needed more TLC. But dude, $2.4 million? You and I could accidentally make a movie that makes $2.4 million. I mean, that's so bad. And it's not like this is a busy weekend. You're talking Bob Marley, One Love repeats at number one with 13.5. Demon Slayer, 11.5. Ordinary Angels, 6.5. Madam Web, 6. Migration, 3. Argyle, 2.8. Wonka, 2.5. Drive Away Dolls lost to Wonka, Argyle, and Migration. Migration's been out since Christmas.
And so is Wonka.
Wonka's been out since before Christmas.
Yeah. And it lost to Argyle, and Argyle was terrible.
Yeah, and Argyle was a box office bomb. I mean, Argyle only made $41 million domestically.
Yeah.
But this is an atrocious. I don't know if we will ever see Margot Qualley as a lead actress in a movie in the next 10 years now. I truly mean that.
Which is really unfortunate. But maybe she's just better as a supporting character. And maybe that's just what it comes down to. I mean, her career I guess her career isn't that big right now. This is her first leading role.
I think this is her first leading role because she was in Poor Things. She was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But like, if she was a leading role in anything else, it's not a big movie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this, I mean, I don't think we'll see her in a leading role anytime soon. I mean, this, you're talking like, this is all time bad. It says the budget was only $20 million. I finally did find that.
That makes
into
sense.
The range of $20 million, meaning it doesn't need to make a fortune and break even, but it's not even going to come close to that. I mean, it's, it's not even, I mean, this might not hit double digits.
Yeah.
And the problem is with this movie is that it's not going to have the word of mouth, because even John, like you say, okay, I liked it, but I didn't love it. You know, you gave it 3 stars. Maybe we were riding a high from 100 Beavers or whatever that Canadian movie.
Hundreds of Beavers. Hundreds. It's actually a Wisconsin film. By
no, no. Say it, John. What did you text me? You said it was a what film?
It's an American film.
And you know where Canada is, right, John? It's in America. You've told me that like 75 times on this podcast. So damn it, you better put some respect on Canada's name. But maybe you were riding the high. I don't know how I tell, because like this is also one of those movies, because it is so graphic.
It is very graphic.
I can't turn around and say to like, my parents love the Coen brothers. I can't say, go watch this movie. There's no way.
It did seem a little, we've kind of mentioned it several times. I mean, we mentioned it when we talked about Poor Things. There's this, sex in Hollywood is getting really weird. Just like the overabundance of it all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm. It's like they need to figure out how to top themselves every time now, because just having, like, I think about back in 2006 when Borat came out, and there's that scene with him and his cameraman, and you know, they're like going through every sex position. You got the giant, you know, blur out of his penis and everything. And when I think about that movie, that was so unbelievable at the time. People had not seen something like that. And it's like, okay, now how do you keep going beyond that, right? If you're going to make a comedy and it's going to be a sex comedy, it can't just be like, it can't just be jokes about sex. There has to be like aggressive amount. I mean, this was like shocking to me. And we were in a theater with like a trio of older people who probably were in their like 60s or 70s. And they were sitting right behind us. And like, that was an uncomfortable movie to watch. One, because none of us were laughing at the stuff that was happening. And then also you're like, okay, but clearly I'm supposed to be laughing at this, and I'm not laughing at this, and it's gratuitous. So what was kind of the point?
It feels like a movie that came out 20 years too late.
I agree. It felt like a first draft of a 90s comedy.
Yeah. Like, I think we're just at a point where sex comedies don't work anymore, which is why we don't see them that often anymore. What was the last sex comedy before this?
Box office, and I have to type in box office sex comedies. Thanks, John. Nice. Box office sex comedies 2023. Let's see. Biggest R-rated comedy of 2023 was, I mean, Anyone But You. Is that a sex comedy though?
I don't know. I haven't seen it.
I haven't either. So I don't know. I mean,
I guess it kind of depends what we're like classifying as a sex comedy.
Yeah, I classify like American Pie.
Yeah, like that. That is the prototypical sex comedy.
Yeah.
Did you mention Sex Drive?
Yeah. You never seen that?
No.
Oh, that's a great movie. If that's the one I'm thinking of. Is that the one I'm thinking of?
It's the Amish one, right?
No, I don't think so. No, it's literally, it's got James Marsden and Seth Green.
Oh, okay.
And it's a high school senior. A high school senior drives cross country with his best friends to hook up with a babe he met online.
That's the plot of literally every movie that came out in that decade.
Yeah. I liked it, man. Good movie. Okay. This to me too, it was too much. That's really all it was. It was just too much.
There was a lot of sex in this movie. A lot.
Yeah.
And
it wasn't funny. And that was the thing. It was putting more sex into the movie for the laughs. And then it wasn't funny, in my opinion.
And like, I understand where Ethan Coen's going with this, where he's like, has these two foil characters that are kind of like one needs to learn to be a little more, you know, rigid in their life, and one needs to really relax in their life. And it's kind of like that, like almost like a buddy cop type of situation, but it's almost too prototypical. And the characters are almost flanderizations of themselves.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is too, like, focus features, what is going on, man? Like, what is going on with focus features? They did Lisa Frankenstein. They did the holdovers. Like, the holdovers was great.
Yeah.
And focus features, like, you know, they had done Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and all that. But if you start looking at the movies that they have coming up, the American Society of Magical Negroes, the Bike Riders, Nosferatu, hey, hopefully that ends up being good. Back to Black looks like it's going to be a disaster. It looks like they're just trying to jump in, and maybe these music movies are going to be successful. But I don't know, man. Like, I saw the trailer for three of those movies. Was it three? One, two. I saw the trailer for three of those movies prior to Drive Away Dolls.
Yeah.
And I just sat there and I was like, what is Focus Features doing? They used to be groundbreaking. They used to be the ones who took the risks on movies like The Holdovers.
Mm-hmm.
And now it seems like they're trying to lean into what they think the American public wants to watch. And the truth is, like, that's not how you make movies. That's not how you end up being successful. And like, no matter what you want to say, Focus Features has been a staple for years, but they're not too big to fail. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I think a lot of studios are struggling trying to figure out what their identities are right now. And I think Hollywood itself is struggling to figure out what its identity is now.
Mm-hmm.
We're at a major point where Gen Z is coming to that, like, young adulthood and are going to be your major box office drivers, but they're not flocking to the box office, right?
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, I think Hollywood's struggling to figure out what appeals to everything, which is why we're kind of getting this smattering of, like, everything being thrown at the wall.
Yeah. And I don't know why in an age where there's never been more data on a generation ever than there currently is on Gen Z, because everything's on TikTok and Instagram and you can get as much information as you want about these people. In this era, why in the world is it so hard for Hollywood to understand? Now, here's my theory. They're trying to use AI to solve every problem. And I'm not saying they're making movies with AI, but I think that they're using AI generated, you know, information to try to turn around and say, okay, this is what will appeal to people. Mm-hmm. And it feels like they're not actually making a trailer to appeal to people. And like, the trailers suck, the movies themselves, it feels like they're not understanding what to cut and what to keep in anymore. I mean, the box office hits of Barbie, Oppenheimer, those make sense. Wonka makes sense. I don't even know if Wonka was a box office hit, but it makes sense.
I mean, it's Bob still Marley, theaters 2 months later, Phil. It has to be making some money.
It has to be making some money. Bob Marley, One Love, like, it makes sense. But a movie like Argyle, that doesn't make sense to me. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you mess up a movie like Argyle that much?
Is this a consequence of the streaming age?
Probably.
Right? Like, we've talked about it several times where Netflix, Apple, even Amazon, they just, like, create so much content that they don't spend time working on the quality of the content.
Yeah. No, and that could very well be it. I mean, and at this point too, it's become too easy to say, hey, you want to just come over and watch a movie? Like, if you're teens with your friends, you don't go to a video store to rent a movie. You don't necessarily need to go to the movies. You can just go to your friend's house, their parents' house, whatever, and sit there and watch a movie. It's cheaper. So you're not asking mom and dad for money. You know, you're not, like, maybe you want to go out. I mean, teens don't want to just sit in their house all the time. But, like, also, Drive Away Dolls isn't a movie for teens. Drive Away Dolls is supposed to be a movie for people in their young 20s. And, man, this is not a movie. Like, if we were in college, we would have went and saw this movie, come out and said, that sucked, and never told anybody to go see it.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think it's a... I'm very interested to see how it ages and to see if anyone talks about this movie, even a year from now.
People will try to turn around and be like, oh, it was just a misunderstood good movie. No, it's not. It's just not good. I hated hated this movie. I ranked my 2024, John. You ready?
Yes.
Number one or number three, Drive Away Dolls. Number two, Mean Girls. Number one, Argyle.
Wow.
That's how bad this year
wow.
is.
Wow.
But like Drive Away Dolls is 66% right now. Mm-hmm. There's no way 2/3 of the critics who watched that movie liked it. There's no way. They're hoping that they're going to get an interview or somebody will click whatever. There's no way. I'm just not buying it. It has a 35% from fans, dude. That's brutal.
Yeah. Well, I if anything, this proves that names don't mean anything anymore.
I mean, yeah. That's
your movie.
Yeah. All right, let's move.
Even the name Cohen wasn't enough to get people to go out and see this movie.
Yeah, I know. On a slow weekend.
Mm-hmm.
On a slow weekend. All right, let's jump over. Let's move on. Yeah. Let's jump over. So we had a movie. We had a Cohen movie. I'm not going to call it a Coen Brothers. We had a movie directed by one of the Coen Brothers, and we had Black Panther: Wakanda Forever. As expected, I had one-star movie and 1 3-star movie. The fact that the Drive Away Dolls was the 1-star movie and Black Panther: Wakanda Forever was the 3-star movie is the most shocking thing ever. John,
yeah,
I don't know how to say this. It hurts me. It pains me. It brings me to my knees, and I feel like I have to like apologize to somebody. I have this ranked as my 7th favorite of the 30 Marvel Cinematic Universe movies that we watched, ahead of the original Iron Man, behind Guardians of the Galaxy. And what I appreciated about this movie, look, man, everybody knows I'm not a fan of the original Black Panther. I have the original Black Panther ranked 23rd out of 30. I would have had it lower had I never watched it again. I hate that it was nominated for Best Picture. I hate blah, blah, blah. I can go right down the line. When Chadwick Boseman died, and it's so unfortunate that he passed away as young as he did, especially from colon cancer. I mean, that's like horrible at such a young age. But when he passed away, Marvel had an interesting situation on their hands. They had to tell a story. They had to actually put time and effort into telling a story. Because they had just lost, probably other than Robert Downey Jr., their most popular at the time character. They had lost the man. And you're not replacing Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther. You're not doing it. You're not doing it. And Chadwick Boseman was the most popular other than Robert Downey Jr. at that time. He was ahead of the Chris's. You know, I could go down the line. I'm not going to do it. But he was the second most popular, maybe even the most popular. Because when Black Panther came out, it did feel like a cultural type movie, right?
Absolutely.
Like you saw a lot of Black America was very into that movie and loved it. And Chadwick Boseman kind of became like, that's who you were going to cosplay as. That's like who you were going. You were saying, yes, finally, this is finally a movie for me to sit down and watch. And his passing forced Marvel to not be lazy.
Yeah.
And that's just, it's incredible what happens when creative people have to be creative. And it's so unfortunate that Chadwick Boseman's death is what forced this to happen. But I sat there and watched the first, this is, that movie's 2 hours and 43 minutes long.
It's long.
I sat there and watched the first hour and a half of this movie. And I said, holy shit, this is a regular movie. This is a movie that also happens to be an action movie, but this is a movie. This is a movie. This is a movie. This is a movie. I was so into this movie for the most part. I mean, granted, at the end, it turns into a CGI mess, blah, 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 whatever. But the Tenoch stuff was cool. I enjoyed him as a villain. I thought that was nice. I enjoyed the ending of this movie. I can't believe I'm saying that, but I thought that twist, that little twist at the end where they don't kill Tenoch is a good twist.
You mean Namor, right?
Namor. Why am I saying Tenoch?
I think that was the name of the city.
Is that what it is? Whatever. Namor. Yes, because Noah Moore. Okay, that was stupid. Noah Love, whatever. But yes, Namor.
It was stupid.
But I liked that. I liked that twist that they don't kill him. I like the idea. I think the actor's name is Tenoch, if I'm not mistaken. That's what's in my head.
Oh,
is it? Yes, it is. That's his name. Tenoch Huerta Mejia. So yes, that's what's in my head. But I just really appreciated that. And I, after this movie ended, I gave it 2.5 stars and I went, I took a shower, and in the shower, you know, I had my moment where you're like, you know, you gotta like punch the thing. Cause you're like, yes, I feel like I'm in like a Rocky movie and I just finished the biggest challenge of my life, which was watching four phases of Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, tears streaming down my face. I feel like Will Smith in The Pursuit of Happiness. I sat there and I said, you're being an asshole giving this movie 2.5 stars. You're trying so hard to pretend you didn't like this movie as much as you did. Just admit you liked it, sit down and give it 3 stars and take it like a man when people eventually say to you, you're a fraud who this whole time was saying Black Panther was trash and the MCU was trash. And like, I just liked this movie. I thought they did a great job. The score was incredible. I can't believe I'm saying that. The use of score, the use of diegetic music, like the real music, whatever that they're also pulling from like the real world was great. The sister who's the lead actor in this movie, like, I don't necessarily think she's a very good actress, but she served the role in this. Angela Bassett did not deserve to be nominated for an Oscar just because she cried and made noises a couple times, but it's a good performance. It's just, hey, people are doing that in movies, not superhero movies, all the time. So we shouldn't be like rewarding it because it happens once in a superhero movie. But all that to say, I will now let John talk. I enjoyed Black Panther: Wakanda Forever. And like, if you were to say to me, what one of these movies, if you were to say, watch a Marvel movie that is a legitimate movie, the most like a legitimate movie, this is the one I would say.
I think it's fair because, in all honesty, we don't see the Black Panther in this movie until 2 hours into it.
2 hours.
It spends so much of its runtime building everything else, working on everything else. I think the way that Marvel approaches Chadwick Boseman's death here shows that they understood they had to be respectful in this and deal with it as delicately as possible. Mm-hmm. And they were able to, especially like not having him in the film at all, being able to start this movie with just like a cold open of Shuri dealing with T'Challa dying, going into the Chadwick Boseman opening scroll for the Marvel logo and everything. It felt so respectful, and it made them tell an actual story about grief. This movie has so many massive themes, and I think the grief theme is the one that's actually flushed out the most and is fully dealt with in this movie, as opposed to the idea of like technology versus tradition, which is mentioned in the movie but isn't really flushed out quite enough. American colonialism in general and American interventionism, like those type of things are skirted, or like they're mentioned, they are shown, but they aren't delved into that much.
Yeah.
But the grief in this movie is fantastic. And that's what really holds it up. That, and you also have like this incredibly compelling villain who is, you know, changed from the original Marvel character. Namor is like the king of Atlantis in the comics. Mm-hmm. Changing him to be Mesoamerican, fantastic choice. It works so well with the character.
It actually made sense. Yeah.
It made so much sense. It was a logical decision that they just put into use. And it translated really well onto screen, despite the fact that half this movie looks like Avatar because they're fighting blue people.
Yeah, it did have a big Avatar feel, which was a turnoff for me as somebody who really does not like either of the Avatar movies. It also really showed, though, this movie that I've talked a lot about it, where it feels like there's a lot of fan service and a lot of pandering. I talked about it with the Eternals, where, okay, we're going to have a deaf character, we're going to have one gay character, we're going to have one... this, and then what was the last one we watched? What was the last movie?
Like last week's movie?
Yeah, what was last week's? Thor: Love and Thunder.
Thor: Love and Thunder. Yeah.
If like when they do with the rock guy, whatever his name is, where like he like now all of a sudden they're gay just for like the sake representation for the sake of representation.
Yeah.
What I felt like was happening with Disney and Marvel, especially, was they didn't understand that by including representation didn't mean that it had to feel half-assed and bad. You could include representation and also turn it into art. Like that was allowed. Right. And you see that all the time in other movies that are coming out, but it just really felt like in those movies, they were just trying to push it in and be like, look guys, we did it. We're Disney and we're on your side. It's like, okay, great. Good for you. But it always felt forced. And then in this one, you sat there and you said, wow, they had to handle probably one of the hardest subjects to handle, which is the death of the lead actor of your franchise. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm going to say Black Panther as its own franchise here in the MCU. Yeah. You have to handle that situation. That's not easy. And they did it with such grace, and they did it so impressively that it left me scratching my head saying, why wasn't all of the difficult, touchy subjects, why weren't they all handled this well? And the answer is because handling things this well doesn't always necessarily mean money. Mm-hmm. And all they were concerned about is they were pounding out all this other bullshit was money, 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 money. That's not the case with this movie. They knew that this was going to make money because of the success of the first Black Panther. Now you have to give the proper send-off to who is going to be... People always talk about what's the legacy of Marvel Cinematic Universe? How do I feel about these movies? I always feel like they're going to age like vinegar, right? They're going to be wine that turns into vinegar. But Chadwick Boseman is going to go down as Black Panther as one of the most iconic people ever in a movie. Like, he's going to get to the Indiana Jones, Han Solo level because he had passed. It's the Joker with Heath Ledger. The Joker with Heath Ledger, that's a great performance. It is so overrated, even though I think it is like an all-time great, but it's so overrated because he passed. So now it's become legend. It has gone beyond. Chadwick Boseman and Black Panther is going to be all-time iconic, and they handled it so unbelievably well. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. And I was impressed, and I was sitting there saying to myself, if only this is how they always handled the movies that they were making rather than just turning out an endless money pit.
Do you think, obviously, like, the death of Chadwick Boseman happened August 2020, I believe, and this movie was already in production at the time. Do you think the death made them take their time, and also the fact that COVID was happening, so they had to kind of, you know, they had more time naturally? Like, was it the entire combination of the situation of things that made them put time into this? Is it just Ryan Coogler coming out as Ryan Coogler here?
It's really hard to know, because what's so tricky about the Chadwick Boseman thing is Chadwick Boseman was sick for a very long time.
But didn't tell
anyone. He had been diagnosed with colon cancer. What'd you say, John?
But he didn't tell anyone, though.
He didn't tell anybody. That's what I'm saying. So I don't know when he started to reveal, because he was diagnosed in 2016. So he was diagnosed even before the first Black Panther movie came out.
Oh, wow.
And he ended up he didn't die until 2020. Mm-hmm. But it really is, man, it's hard to know. I do believe, though, that had he not passed away, 100% this would have just been a continuation of what the original Black Panther was. They would not have gotten into any of these other deeper, darker themes, and it wouldn't have been a very good movie. I don't think it would have. I think it would have been a very lazy, typical sequel to a big box office movie.
I think if we look at the writing credits for this movie, right? Like, the story itself is written by Ryan Coogler. Mm-hmm. Ryan Coogler and Joe Robert Cole write the screenplay. Do you think this was a personal moment for Coogler, being able to write this story for someone he had worked with previously and had, like,
absolutely,
I'm assuming was a friend of some sort?
Absolutely. I think for sure. I think Coogler is one of those people who his whole entire career has been about taking these subjects and making them so much deeper. Nobody thought Creed was going to be as good as Creed was. Yeah. He did Fruitvale Station, like, which is an incredible movie.
Incredible movie.
Yeah. And so, like, I feel like for him, this was an opportunity to bring his art into the MCU in a way that hadn't been done before.
And that Disney couldn't say no to.
They couldn't say no to it. Exactly. And there's still parts of this movie that I absolutely hate. But
being the character of Riri Williams exists, and that just makes you wonder why. But
they couldn't say, you're right, they couldn't say no to what he was doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such a weird circumstance for this movie to be built or to be made this way, right? Mm-hmm. Where because of these real life circumstances, there's more time put into the movie. There's a lot of attention to detail, which I find that we haven't had in a lot of these Marvel movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's why I'm excited to stop watching them. And I will say, based on what I hear, because I haven't seen them, they go right back to making shit immediately after this movie. It just goes back to being, how can we make as much money as quickly as we possibly can? It's a shame. It is, because this could have been a turning point for the franchise and for the universe. And instead, then it's, okay, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. Guardians 3 got some pretty good reviews, and then the Marvels. Two of those three movies really just got panned critically. Mm-hmm. And the other one is a Guardians movie, and people just love Guardians at this point. So, like, it's hard to imagine that getting bad reviews at this point.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Like, we're in a time where Marvel's had to deal with real life situations again, because their entire plan for Phase 5 and Phase 6 is, like, out the window.
Yeah.
They're hemorrhaging money at the moment. People aren't going out to see their movies anymore. Maybe we get more movies like this moving forward, where it's an actual movie and, like, the superhero is the backside of it, right? Like, yes, this movie's dealing with established plots that were already present in the MCU, but it feels so much smaller than a lot of these MCU movies, mm-hmm. despite the fact that it's dealing with, like, international relationships.
Yeah. Yeah, and what's funny is this wasn't an origin story, but it feels like the best origin story that Marvel ever told.
I mean, how great of a moment is it when Shuri goes, like, uses the heart-shaped herb and then sees Killmonger?
That part was great. And it's always great to get Killmonger back involved, because I talk all the time about how Killmonger needed to be in these movies more. Mm. Having Killmonger be there, because you're like, okay, she's going to go and Chadwick Boseman can't be there. This wasn't a choice of Chadwick Boseman, you know, it's character passing away. This was Chadwick Boseman really to die. So what were they going to do? And for it to be Killmonger and that kind of be the turning point of the movie of who are you going to be? What kind of person are you going to be? Are you going to be like me and get it done? Or are you going to be like your brother and be more worried about, like, feelings or whatever the words is that he used? And and it works. It really does work. And it works better than the one in the first movie where it's, you know, oh, I came and I saw my father. This one works so much better.
Yeah, because it's the contrast of it, right? Where there's the expectation that, you know, she's going to get the affirmation she needs to be the symbol for her people and lead the people. And instead, she realizes that there's, like, this darkness inside of her. And it's that common theme we see in a lot of superhero movies about that, like, darkness within and everything like that. Yeah. Obviously, like, it's a theme in The Hulk. It's a theme in, I mean, if we look at every bad third X-Men movie, right? Like, it's those themes that comic books are meant to explore. And in this case, it's done in a way where you're not sure how it's going to end. And for Shuri to renounce renounce her spot within this monarchy at the end of this film, and to still hold this mantle of Black Panther and be this symbol for the people, but, like, as a protector, and that's it. It's kind of a big moment for this character in general.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. And I'm curious to see what they'll end up doing moving forward with this part of the MCU, because I'm assuming they're going to make more Black Panther movies. I doubt that they're done. Two of the most successful movies in the entire franchise. So I'd assume that there's going to be more, but what do you do next? What do you do next?
I don't know. I mean, you've kind of tied these characters of Namor and Black Panther together at this point, especially with, like, how the movie ends with Namor saying, you know, eventually people are going to go in for Wakanda and then, you know, they'll come to us as their allies. So, and there's a plot point in this movie that doesn't have any payoff whatsoever, and it's when the CIA is like, yeah, we're going to invade Wakanda.
Yeah, that just seems like it's always the threat of what's happening. And again, that goes back to, you were talking about, like, colonizing and things like that, and how that's a big theme in these movies. It seems like that's always what the threat is, but it never actually really feels like a threat in these two movies. It feels like it's just something that's said to be said, as if it's the big thing, but as an audience, you never really feel it.
Yeah. You don't feel like it ever actually gets there for it. But I mean, that is something it could work towards. It's interesting. This was also the first movie where they could introduce a mutant.
Yeah.
Right. And they specifically use the word mutant to describe Namor, who is a mutant in the comic books and everything, right? So it's kind of our first introduction to X-Men-y characters.
Mm-hmm. Because they're doing X-Men soon, right?
Eventually.
They haven't said when yet, though?
No. There have been hints. But again, the entire slate for what's to come has been completely thrown off because they had to like re-change the entire plan.
Yeah.
So we have no idea what's going on. The latest thing we know is that Fantastic Four is finally cast.
Yeah. By a guy who gets his head popped off in the first 5 seconds, Driveway Dolls.
Yes. But it also has Vanessa Kirby, so it's fine.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, probably not fine, but still.
Yeah. No, this is a good note to end on. Honestly, like this is a good way to end this series, at least for now, until Deadpool and Wolverine comes out. And then we can worry about that. We can do those four movies, get through the other three real quick, do it for a month in the buildup, and then do that movie and just move on. Because I am more excited for our other series. I'm excited to start talking about some other types of movies. And I do feel like the people who have listened to us this entire time, I probably get tired of listening to us bitch and complain about certain movies. Some of these new movies, it's hard to really care too much about because either you go see them and then you don't care to hear about them, or you don't see them and you don't care to hear about them, or you do see them and you really like them and then maybe you want to hear people talk about them. But that's fewer and further in between. So, you know, it'll be fun as we start to really dive in and say, okay, what movie makes sense to do this week? And I'm really excited to just do these silly brackets and have some fun with this again. Jason Obermeyer asked, so Phil, how do you feel about the MCU, better or worse? There was no 4-star movie in there. There were a couple that I really, really enjoyed, which I always knew I was going to because I remember liking the original Captain America. So I knew that that was always going to be one that was going to be on my good side. I figured I'd like Guardians. I enjoyed the Spider-Man movies. And then after that, it's all just kind of whatever. The Ant-Man movies were entertaining enough. Iron Man was hit or miss. Thor, I didn't really enjoy at all. Black Widow was whatever. The Avengers movies are terrible. Doctor Strange was bad. Yeah, I mean, it was pretty much what I expected, with the exception of, I guess if you were to ask Phil, what are you most surprised about? It's that I had 9 movies rated 3 stars or more out of 30. I would not have expected myself to put a third of them at 3 stars or more, even though, again, that really just comes down to, okay, there were only 2 that were 3.5 stars. So there were 7 3-star movies, and a 3-star movie to me is just like, it was entertaining. Cool, move on. But yeah. Black Panther was solid. I really enjoyed it. Wakanda Forever, that is. And after that, the bottom is bad, though. Man, there's a lot more bad than good in this franchise, that's for sure.
Yeah, but I mean, like, almost a third of these movies being 3 stars isn't that bad.
No, that's not bad. That's not bad. There's just nothing great. There's nothing... Like, I think what irritates me is, like, when people will go see these movies and act like, oh, these are the greatest movies, man. You got to see this one. None of these movies are you got to see this movie movies. None of them. None of them are.
One thing we've kind of hinted at throughout this series and we haven't really, like, gotten into is, like, why the MCU became so big in the first place. And it's because super movies before the MCU really suck.
Well, Spider-Man, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man was good.
Well, yeah. Well, the first two were. Actually, yeah,
The third one's funny. Three,
so
what are you talking about? The third one.
I know. I just said that. And like, but like in retrospect, like looking at the X-Men movies, X2 is fantastic, but the X-Men movies aren't that good. And that was that time period. But again, it was also this like interconnectedness of all these films that really sparked it and created... not a great decade of film, I think it's safe to say, blockbuster wise. Like, gone are the days where we have just like a standalone blockbuster. And
what do you consider Dune? Because Dune, I know it's part of a series, but like, what do you consider Dune at this point?
It's probably a blockbuster, but it doesn't come out during blockbuster season, so that makes things really weird.
Yeah, it's weird when this movie is being released, man. It truly is weird.
Well, the first one was released in November, right?
Yeah, because that one was definitely for Oscar season, and this got pushed because of all the whatever the strikes and everything. So like, yeah. I mean, look, it's got a 97% right now. Dune Part Two is probably going to be, it's probably going to be hanging around. It's probably going to be hanging around.
Early reviews have been pretty good for this movie.
Yeah. 154 reviews has 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah. That's legit.
Yeah. And I mean, like, it's going to be in the Oscar conversation just because it's going to have the visuals and it's going to have the sound and all those things that the first one swept.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. I'm excited for it. Yeah. We're going to be talking about it next week. I'm going to see it Thursday or maybe Friday. Whatever it is, I'm going to see it. So
me too. It'll be good. It'll be fun.
Yeah. I do want to say before we log off here, I got to go watch a 25th anniversary screening of Audition this past week. And if you want to watch one of the most messed up horror movies of your life, please go watch Audition. What a masterpiece that movie is. Hour and a half, you're like, this is nice. This is a nice little love story. Last 25 minutes is so brutal. And the fact that I got to sit there and I had seen it before, and I went and saw it with my sister who had also seen it. And we're sitting there in the theater, and you could tell that nobody else in the theater had seen it before because people were talking, oh, this is kind of boring. Mm-hmm. When is it going to get scary? What's going on? For the last 25 minutes of the movie, all you heard were chairs squeaking and screeching because people were just moving and cringing and, oh, no. Oh, it's brutal, man. What an absolute masterpiece that movie is. Absolutely stands the test of time. Love it. Love it. Love it. Can't recommend it enough. Not for the faint of heart, though. If you do not like horror, if you do not like gore, if you do not like blood and guts, if you're not into vomit, do not watch this movie. It is a tough watch for the last 25 minutes. But it's so expertly made. I just had to bring that up. It was so fun to watch that.
I'm jealous you got an opportunity to do that. Yeah. I still haven't seen the movie. I have to watch it eventually.
Yeah, John, that'll make your top 50 or whatever, 100 horror movies, whatever the hell you got over there. But it's in my top 50. I moved it up one spot. I jumped it over the fly. I mean, I love it, man. But then I start looking at my top. I have it as my 16th best horror movie ever because, like, the ones above it, I just say, how can I move it above any of those?
I mean, I really enjoy Takashi Miike. I think he's a very talented actor or director.
Yeah, I never saw Ichi the Killer, which I really want to do.
What was the other one of his that I saw? He has a, like,
Assassins.
That one, surprisingly good movie. Like,
yeah,
really good.
That's what I've heard. I've heard that's a very, very good movie.
Yeah. But it is what it is. Jason Obermeier, we are not interested in reviewing the DCEU. But our $5 Tuesday next week is
Batman.
Tim Burton's Batman.
It is Tim Burton's Batman. John, that reminds me. We got to start filming. We got to start recording some stuff.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, Tim Burton's Batman coming out to you next Tuesday. So that is fun. Good job, John. Way to drop that. So if you want to be a patron, patreon.com/thespecialist. Whole bunch of stuff coming out now, especially with Survivor starting up on Wednesday. Just going to be never ending. We posted on Instagram. If you don't follow us on Instagram, go follow us on Instagram. We posted on Instagram our schedule for this week. 9 podcasts out on the Patreon if you're top tier. And even if you're bottom tier, you're still getting, I think it was 3 podcasts or something like that. Like, still so many. And that's in addition to the 2 fantasy games that are $20 patron only. And then that's in addition to all the stuff that we're putting out on the YouTube channel. So I'm going to have no voice, man. I'm going to have no throat. It's just going to be an absolutely miserable, miserable, brutal week, month, whatever. But it's so fun, man. Doing this stuff is so much fun. And I'm so glad we get to do it. And we'll be back next week talking about Dune Part 2. And it better be damn good because the reviews are great. And I need a good one. I need a good one. Yes,
absolutely.
I need something so I don't have to put Argyle as my favorite movie of this year. So somebody hurry, help, need it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We will see you next week, Dune Part 2, probably on Monday or Tuesday night. I know it's spring break week down here in Florida, so I'm working every day doing sporting events because everybody wants to come down here. So we'll see.
And then we have our Oscar predictions next week too, right?
And we have Oscar predictions next week. Oh, my God. Okay. We'll be doing 2 podcasts next week. Like I said, I'm going to have no vocal cords. I need to go on voice rest. I'm going to be like Adele, man. Like how Adele, every time she does a tour, then she's off for 3 years because she has nothing left. That's going to be me. Thank you all. See you later.